Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
I wish you bluebirds in the spring. This is John Williams. It's 10:11 on WGN. 3, 2, 1, hit it.
I wish you bluebirds.
It's better when he does it, isn't it?
In the spring.
I always think of this song this time of year.
To give your heart a song to sing. And then a kiss. But more than this, I wish you love.
What's the current temperature in Chicago there, Don Kleppen? What are we looking at today?
High of 67, John.
An angel.
The current temperature is...
Right now, it's 40 at O'Hare.
40 at O'Hare. Feels
as the music stops.
Screeching halt.
By Jose Feliciano. I'll tell you what. That's a lovely song. Jose Feliciano, I Wish You Bluebirds in the Spring. Go listen to that and you will thank me throughout the day. So here we roll from the Allstate Skyline Studio on a sort of spring-like day. And much of Chicago is talking baseball today. We got a couple of games. The teams are, one's on the road and one's at home, right? The White Sox are still at home or just opened up at home yesterday against the Mariners. What a game that was. And the Cubs come home on Monday.
As they hopefully try to pick up a couple of wins in Milwaukee.
A White Sox fan said to me before the show today that if the Cubs lose out in Milwaukee this weekend, they'll have their home opener 7 games out of first place. White Sox fans, do not gloat. This is my advice to you. I would not be gloating. I would just enjoy my 500 start. White Sox fans, you guys probably have 156 games left this season, and the Cubs probably have more than 156 games left this season. So enjoy it, but let's not do that already. This could haunt you. Still, how about them Cubs? What the heck?
We were talking before the show. I mean, it's going into this year, the issues was mainly the offense, because the offense is... basically what held them out of going on a long postseason run last season. And now the offense is great.
Man.
But that bullpen, yeah, about that thing.
Okay, so the Cubs have lost 6 in a row. They gave up 35 walks in their first 5 games. They've given up how many runs now? What was the run production story?
They've given up 59 runs this year. They have scored 46.
Yeah, I mean, those are gigantic numbers.
They're huge. Well, I mean,
on either side, if you get 46 in your first 7 games, you ought to win half of those.
Well, you look at the game yesterday, you look at the series finale against Texas when they lost in the walk-off wild pitch.
Yeah.
Was that a 10-9 final in Texas? I mean, it's...
And they're scoring runs late, too.
They are, especially yesterday.
Put up 4 in the ninth 2 games ago. Yesterday, they scored again late.
3 times they've already scored in double digits. Opening day... the series finale against Texas, which was 11-10, and then yesterday they scored 10 but lost 13-10.
Did I read that this is their worst start in 22 years? It was the year they went 0-14.
I was going to say, what was that, 83?
Whatever 22 years
that ago. That was the Lee Elia tirade, correct?
I'm not good on that. The Tribune posts now wins, losses, percent, games back, and then wild card games back. Have you noticed that? They started the season already posting wild card games back
in the
newspaper.
Because April is the new October, didn't you know?
I get it, but I would insert that in September.
I agree. Yeah, don't even throw that.
What are we doing? That's the waste of space. I mean, it's hard enough to follow all of the...
Well, we're not killing trees anymore. We're not printing out these things anymore. Everything's online.
Okay. About the fact that you can't win pennant races in April, but you can lose pennant races in April. I did a little bit of math. I think this is right. The Cubs now need to go 89-66 to get 90 wins. They need to go 89-66 to get to 90 wins. You probably need 90 wins to win the division. They have to play 23 games above 500 to do that. That's a fancy way of overstating the case.
Yes.
But that's also true. So it's time to get on the horse, fellas. Meanwhile, the White Sox have been, a lot of us have been hoping that they would be a 500 club. And they opened up on the road. They won their home opener, and they're a 500 club. I say we just pack her up and go home for the season now and call it a 500 year.
Well, for them, it's the offense as well. We have yet to see an Eloy Jimenez home run, but I think the Yoan Moncada progress is humongous for this team already. Even Tim Anderson putting together very complete at-bats. I know he missed the majority of the last week, but still, it just seems like these guys are finding their groove a little bit more. And this is something I thought at the beginning of the year with a lot of, not speculation, a lot of the attention is going to be on Jimenez. So this kind of gives a little bit of an easier path for Moncada and Anderson. And right now they're proving that.
Well, it's nice, too, for Jimenez that since he's not hitting well out of the gate, that the other guys are picking him up. They're not relying on him. He's batting in the middle of the order, which is nice. And shoot, if Palka and Jimenez start to hit, they're going to put up some runs, too.
You'll have a very complete lineup, yeah. And they're already doing a great job of scoring runs. And Jimenez isn't doing terribly. Well, I guess...
What's he, 200?
Yeah, you look at the numbers. He did have a two-hit game the other day. So, I mean, that's going to happen. Those woes are going to happen. But I like how Ricky's got him in the middle of the lineup, not putting too much pressure on him. And with his raw power... It's just going to come. The power is going to be there, I feel. The contact might not right away, but the power is going to eventually come. And once it does, I feel like it'll be a floodgate.
Nice crowd at the park yesterday. You heard us perhaps broadcast from Cork and Kerry. My ears are still ringing a little bit. It was fun at the ballpark. Nice crowd. And that was a game. That was an up and down, up game. That was just a lot of fun. That was a down and up game, actually. They scored first, then we scored. That was a bizarre three errors in the first inning, Seattle? Seriously? What's going on out there? I guess they lead the majors in errors. Maybe they're not going to be great with the glove this year, but that was a fun game to watch. One last note about the Cubs and the White Sox. The news click at WGNradio.com, our daily web poll question, ask you to sound off about the Chicago Cubs. You have three options. A, we're fine. Nothing to worry about here. B, troublesome signs, but we'll be okay. And red flags, big trouble. It went like this. 15% of you said fine, nothing to worry about. 50% are saying troublesome signs, but we'll be okay. And 35% say red flags, big trouble. Put another way, two-thirds of you are optimistic still about the Cubs season, and one-third of you are saying hokey smokes. You can vote on the news click at WGNradio.com. It's somewhere on the page. It's always on the John Williams page. Just click through there to find me. Walter Jacobson's wife passed away this week in a very strange accident. Susie Jacobson died at the age of 62. She was walking their dog in Florida. The dog yanked a chain, and she fell down, hit her head, and the next day she passed away. 62 years old. She was a great equestrian, and she was a USA class, at one point one of the best in her age group in the country, tennis players. She went to Yale, was the first woman's tennis team captain at Yale, et cetera, et cetera. It's just tragic. I just wanted to reach out to Walter and to Susie's families and to wish them all of our best. I saw that Bill Curtis said some nice things about Walter and Susie in the paper today, at least online is where I saw it. And Bill Curtis was in our studio the other day, too. And I was going to broach the subject with Bill because he and Walter worked together for so long, but I wasn't. The timing just didn't work out. He came here to plug something else, and so we talked off the air about it. And I know that he felt deeply about it, and you can read more about that in the paper. When Bill was in the studio, he was here with another guy named John St. Augustine, who is an author and a talk show host. And in a couple of Mondays, on the 15th, they're going to do a bit of a symposium, a multimedia display at Northeast Illinois University on the city's northwest side. And that's a talk about climate change, global warming, the environment. It's not one of these preachy things like, hey, we've all got to do better, although we've all got to do better. But it's more, let's just know what our involvement is with the earth. Bill, you know, is a rancher, too, and he talks about grasses that have deep roots and hold the soil. We've got to stop phosphorus runoffs into our streams. So that's one of his things. And John talks about the environment and the climate as well. they were in the studio talking to us the same day that the president was saying that those wind turbines in Illinois and Indiana and elsewhere might cause cancer. That's kind of crazy talk. But the president made two points, and I wanted you to just sound off on this. I'll pause. My number's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. If you live along the I-65 corridor in Indiana, if you live down by Kankakee, if you live west on 88, you see these great big wind turbines, and some of them, I'm told, are 600 feet high. They're bigger than the Statue of Liberty. They're two times bigger than the Statue of Liberty. Some of them are literally two football fields on end. And when you drive by them, they're engineering marvels, aren't they? And I'm all for it. How could you be against it? Don was doing a story about renewable energy in the news just a minute ago. I think we all are or should be for it, right? I can't imagine why you wouldn't. Unless one of those windmills was in your neighbor's backyard. Because, well, I think it's fantastic. I know I wouldn't want one near me. The president said the value of your property drops radically if one is near you. And I'm wondering what your experience has been with the following. Do you hear noise? How much of a disruption is it to you? Do you suffer that strobe light effect? And finally, what happened to the value of the properties in your neighborhood when those things went up? I'm kind of curious what really does happen there. Yeah, texts and calls are all over the map on this thing, too. It's 1026 on WGN. This is John Williams. We got time for a couple quick calls, maybe. Let's start with Jeff. You're on WGN. Hi, Jeff. What did you want to say? You're on the air.
Hey, John. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling. What's up?
Hey, I live in the footprint of a wind farm down by Kankakee.
Yeah.
2,200 feet from my house to the closest wind turbine. So I have experienced that flicker. It lasts for less than a minute. A lot of times everything has to be right. You know, the sun on the horizon has to be between houses and comes in our front window about sunrise. So you have to be up, you know, to experience it. So you know, it's not bothersome. The first time it surprised me, but it's not bothersome. The sound, it's just like, you know, if you ever live next to a highway and a semi truck goes by, you're going to hear it. When the wind is coming from the direction of the wind turbine to the house, I hear a slight whoosh kind of sound. Not even that dramatic. It's sometimes it sounds like, you know, when you hear a jet way high in the sky and you just hear just a little rumble from that. Sometimes it's like that. But it becomes white noise after a while.
Two questions for you.
Sure.
Are you getting any money from the company that put the wind turbine there? Turbine?
Okay, so I'm not a landowner, so I don't get that. But the school district that I'm in gets something like $1.5 million a year in tax money.
How do you feel about
from the wind farm?
How do you feel about the appearance of the thing? Does it bother you that it's on your landscape?
That's one of the big objections. At first, you know, you kind of notice them. After a while, it's kind of a graceful kind of thing. I mean, they don't turn really fast. I really don't.
No complaints.
I mean, here we live out on the prairie. It's not like I've got a big prominent land feature, a mountain or a redwood tree or something that, you know, it's between me and the prairie. really sometimes don't look that high. I mean, I'm kind of looking out on the horizon, you know, plants, livestock, that kind of thing. But so, again, it's like the white noise thing, kind of get used to it.
Yeah, really interesting. Really interesting. And you're not worried that it causes cancer, right? Or the sound from it causes cancer?
Call me in 20 years. No, I am not worried about that.
Okay. Thanks for the call. John, have had wind towers on our farm for 10 years. No dead birds, flicker problems, or loud noises yet. We see property taxes paid by wind farm amounts to approximately $30,000 on each tower per year. John, they do harm the birds, exclamation point. John, there are wind farms you can see between Danville and Champaign off I-74. Hey, John 630 says, I'd rather have a house a mile from a wind farm than a mile from an oil field, a nuclear facility, or a coal mine. And the texts go on. You can continue to comment on that at 312-981-7200. We'll do the news. That's next on WGN. You in the brackets, Don? Do you have? Are you interested in the Final Four today?
Not brackets, but I drafted some teams and I did a 1 through 16 like pool. I'm pretty sure I'm out of all of them.
That'd be a fun way to do it. In other words, after the first Thursday and Friday, when it goes to 32 teams, you wait until it gets to the 16 and then you pick then.
No, you take one of each of the seeds and, you know, one of the, one out of the four candidates of every...
From each of the corners, you know how it's split up into...
Yeah.
Thanks, Joe. Yeah, yeah. It's like, you know, from each of the four of those brackets, you just pick one of those teams of each seed and you just pick one to go all the way. And even in that regard, I still kind of...
That's similar to what I did, too. It's a pool where you get randomly selected four teams, one from each corner of the bracket. And your team needs to win to advance, but if your team loses and they still cover the spread, then you get the team that won. And the team that had, or the person that had that winning team loses that team, but I'm out of that pool as well.
Well, that's kind of interesting, too.
Maybe they should do it where they just wait until there's 16 teams left and everybody's brackets are already destroyed, right? And then, does anybody do that? They say, okay, here's the 16. Of course, you have to hustle and get the money from everybody and quick pick your team.
Right.
That's kind of a hassle. But if you could do that, maybe that would be kind of fun.
Probably be your best shot of getting a perfect bracket that the world is still waiting for.
Totally.
I'm in brackets, and I am in third place.
Nice.
Yeah. Wow. How many people are in that?
7.
Okay.
Still respectable.
Mm-hmm. Top half.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You know, you're getting a lot of compliments today, John.
Does it feel like I'm fishing?
No, I guess not, because the one by Lou was totally unsolicited.
Yeah. I don't know what that was all about. Lou wants to post a picture every day of the clothes I'm wearing. I'm not comfortable with any of that.
He's into turtlenecks.
Oh, I think you love it. You feel like it's all what's happening here is just totally wasted on radio. Somebody's got to get it documented.
Yeah. Need some validation that way, too. Griff's in the same pool, by the way, I am. On the,
in terms of wanting our clothes photographed every day?
No.
No, definitely not. That would be a nightmare.
I've always said that people who have a lot of knowledge don't separate themselves much from the people who have no knowledge. Or did I say that correctly? That knowing a lot about the NCAA brackets doesn't give you a great advantage. And I've said that in the past about preseason baseball predictions. I'm done talking about the Cubs and the Sox now. But it does seem like the things they said about the Cubs were true. Pitching matters, relief pitching is critical, and doggone it, it's haunting them already. So hopefully for you Cubs fans out there, something will happen.
I feel like one of the main things I've learned in this business is make yourself look like you know a lot when somebody asks, oh, what's wrong with the pitcher? His fastball location. That's it. No matter what the case is, just all
right.
Fastball location.
Oh, that's
not
nice.
Doing too great.
Nice.
Good stuff.
I don't know a lick about this stuff, so... How do I do that, Joe, then? So walk me through this, then.
So if someone talks to you
it's three words. Can you end? It's three words.
Well, technically, fastball is one word.
Oh, I'm so sorry. It's two words.
Yeah, Griff.
And then if a hitter's not doing well, his timing is off.
His timing is off.
So off.
Nice. Yeah. Catch-all.
Now, you might mess it up and say that the pitcher's timing is off. And the
his fastball timing is... what did he say?
And the hitter's fastball location is not... Well, that you could stretch that and make it... Like,
you know what I mean.
He can't locate the fastball to hit it.
Or do what I do. Just make your eyes really wide and back away slowly without saying anything.
Last comments, by the way, in the last half hour, we talked briefly about the wind farms across the country. A lot of them in the Midwest, of course. The president doesn't like this kind of energy for who knows why, but... He said that they cause cancer and your property values drop. I asked you to comment a little bit on that. And among the texters, 630 said that turbine, John, is not pronounced the same way as turbine. You've been saying turbine. John, no more wind farms in central Illinois. Way too many problems with the shadow flicker effect. Lots of noise interferes with the Doppler radar, and you do not know when the storms are coming. John, let's save the planet and not complain, said 262. This from... 815, the neighboring houses around us get a payment every year of around $2,500. 312, John, what about the high-tension wires? About 20 years ago, farmers in Minnesota were upset that it was affecting the cattle, the cows. I don't think we've heard much about that since. 219, it does not necessarily decrease your property value if you're near one of those, but it definitely has an effect on how quickly your house will sell. The pool of people that don't care about it is actually smaller. In fact, somebody said to me they were selling their home. Let me find this text. John, I picked out a house online. When my real estate agent showed it to me, he advised me not to buy it because it was too close to the high tension wires. Are you guys nervous about that? If you were living near high tension wires, unless it's making a sound, are you worried that the something's coming off of there and it's going to get you?
Number one, that was a great impression. Number two, it reminds me of the line from Tommy Boy. Did you grow up under power lines as a kid? And he starts laughing. He goes, why?
Also, the paint chips.
Paint chips, yeah. Did you eat paint chips as a kid? Why?
Why?
The windmills, John, aren't the only thing that mar the landscape. There are power towers that harvest the electricity and carry it away. I live in a county where there are many of these, and it's a real conundrum. You know, the pendulum is definitely swinging that direction, though. A quick note about what Mary Mitchell wrote in the Chicago Sun-Times, and then I want to ask you about your pets. We'll have time for that. She just pointed out in her Sun-Times column that with Lori Lightfoot as mayor, she's mayor-elect, women of color will hold the top five city and county offices in Chicago and Cook County. For the first time in the city's history, black women will hold the political offices in the city and county of Mayor-elect Lori Lightfoot, County Board President Tony Preckwinkle, Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox, Treasurer-elect Melissa Conyers-Irvin, one, two, three, four. That's four. They say with Lori Lightfoot, it'll be five. Oh, yeah. And then Dick Simpson, a University of Illinois at Chicago political science professor, said, add city clerk Anna Valencia, a Latina, to the mix, and it is an all-female executive team in city government made up of minority females. There's not another city in America that has all of that. Some have women, some have minorities and minority women. He says, I do not know of any city that has minority women across the board like this. The top officers are women of color, four of them African-Americans in Chicago/Cook County. Worth noting. Brenda and I were walking Daisy, our dizzy dappled dachshund, along the lake the other day. And it just dawned on me, because this is kind of our routine. We get her to the lake, and she's a rescue, and she's skittish around some things and people. And so we kind of know the drill. When we get her to the lake, we carry her, because if we set her down, she'll just kind of crouch down in a sort of defensive posture. And it seems like she's actually increased her weight, like there's suction cups on the bottom of her feet, and she will not move. You can hardly get her up. But we grab her up, and then we walk her. And we walk her north along the lake. And then whenever we want to get her to walk, if we set her down, she will walk in a southerly direction. Now, I've noticed this before. She is a one-way dog. And I think her gyroscope, I know it is along the lake, is that she will walk south. She will not walk northbound.
Sounds like her fastball location is off.
Or maybe she sees like the magnetic lines like birds do. She's just trying to go, you know, to the South Pole. It's not bad. Could be happening.
I'm sorry. This is a very serious problem. We'll let you have your time with it.
I'm going to let you enjoy that there, Joe, Don. The number's 312-981-7200. But
it was always it is sad, though, and they should be. You guys lay off, because it has always been your greatest dream in life to have a dog that would walk north. I mean, haven't we all dreamed of that?
That's why you get a dog, really.
I know, and then you take it to the lake.
Well, you don't get a dog so you have to carry him halfway. It's a good thing we didn't get one of those, you know, St. Bernards or something.
Oh, man.
See me with it over my shoulders, lugging it along the lake.
Have you looked up, like, the the map of the Iditarod? Does that go north or south? Because if it's south, you're in golden. You just put her at the top.
Trying to have a conversation here, Griff. And it goes like this. 312-981-7200. Don't talk to me about Daisy. She'll be fine. We'll just... If my next show is from Nashville, you know that I took the dog for a long walk. But in the meantime, are there any other peccadillos, curiosities, eccentricities? Does your dog also just do something weird? What is it? 312-981-7200. Tell me I'm not alone. People's pets have all sorts of eccentricities, curiosities, oddities. I described Dizzy Daisy, our dappled dachshund, who will only walk in a southerly direction. And while my friends here find that amusing, I think it's a little alarming and certainly life-altering.
Somebody texted in with a question about that. John 630. John, does she like to walk away from the house or towards the house? Because my dog only likes to walk toward the house.
Oh, you think maybe the dog knows where it is? Well, this boy, if she knows where our house is in relation to our drive in the car to the lake, that would be impressive. And she doesn't walk around our yard, neighborhood,
instinct.
Or house.
Because, instinct.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah, maybe she knows that because actually where we do park the car, it is north of our house. So that dog is smarter than I thought. If the dog goes, well, definitely the home is in a southerly direction. First of all, I didn't know she could talk. Secondly, if she knows that we've driven north and that's her instinct to go home, wow, that's impressive. Like she's like migrating, for crying out loud. Nancy, you're on WGN. Join us. You're on the air. Hi, Nancy. Are you there? Do you guys hear Nancy? Because I don't hear Nancy. Joe, do you hear Nancy?
I do not hear Nancy.
Okay. No, Nancy.
No, Nancy. Nancy, come back. We'll put you on the radio. It'll be a lot of fun. Jeff, you're on WGN Radio.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Talk to us. What do you want to say?
We just rescued an AKC French Bulldog 5 days ago.
Oh,
and
good for you. Good for you.
Well, that's all we ever do is rescue anyway. We've rescued many dogs and cats and birds and so forth, but he's in the backyard right now chasing flies around, and I'm laughing so hard at watching this little boy do this. It's insane.
You rescue birds, by the way?
Parrots, yes, sir.
There are rescue parrots?
My wife does.
Do you live with your wife?
Yes, we do still. Yeah, we're still married.
Okay, well, then I think you are now a bird rescuer. How do you acquire a parrot?
My wife just knows so many people, and there's always people. She's rescued a Senegal parrot. She rescued an African gray, a few cockatoos, of course, cockatiels. But, yeah, now we're down to one bird now, though.
Is it that people die and someone needs to care for the animal, or what happens?
Some of the times it's that way, or it's parents that buy their kids birds and so forth because the kids want birds. Then the kids get older, and the kids leave, they go to college.
Some of those birds live a long time, yeah. Yeah,
they live too long.
Yeah, you're a good man. Thank you for the call, sir.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
His dog chases flies. Nancy, you're on WGN Radio. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, John, we'll try this again.
Yeah,
can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Okay, so we have a little rescue dog named Luther who will only walk backwards in certain parts of the house.
Good.
Which gives him it gives him troubles because if he's positioned the wrong way, he just stands there until someone repositions him, and then he'll continue on his journey. So it has nothing to do with north and south, but he does have some weird quirks.
My best to your family and Luther.
Thank you.
Are we getting any texts on this, by the way, Joe or Griff? Have you read any online? I'll pick up another phone line here. Hey, Paul, you're on WGN. Paul, what did you want to say?
Hey, John, we have a calico cat that we call Callie that meets me at the door every night when I get home. You know, I'm coming in from the garage, and she leads me into the bedroom, jumps up on the bed, expects me to lay on the bed so I can pet her, and she tends to enjoy nuzzling my right front pocket where I keep my wallet. So I don't know if she's trying to indicate I don't spend enough money on her or what the deal is.
Wow, that's a lot of very specific action there, isn't it?
Yes. But she's a doll. We love her.
Amen. Thanks for the call, Paul.
Couple of texts. Sorry, Paul. Our cat, Laszlo, has a pool noodle fetish. We cut them into 3 pieces, and he carries them around the house and wrestles with them. Best cat ever.
A pool noodle fetish. Just leave it right there and let the imagination run wild.
Saving money on toys, too.
Yeah, really. You can get long noodles. You can get a lot out of that.
One says, my dog only barks at people when they leave the house, but not when they come into the house. It scares the crap out of our guests.
When they leave, huh?
When they leave, not when they come in.
Yeah.
Dog just wants to keep the party going.
Yeah. We had a dog, Fred, America's largest wiener dog, the first dachshund we had, who got us into this dachshund wiener dog loop. You know, one dies or you need another one and you just keep replacing them. And then you get a partner sometimes for the one that replaced the one. Now you've got two, et cetera, et cetera. But Fred would get fussy around midnight. And if we had folks over and they were still there, maybe 11:30, he would just come up to them and bark and kind of point to the door. It was the exact opposite. He'd go, you know what? It's time. And I had no problem with that because, you know, it looks bad when I do that. But Fred would just bark at people and then kind of woof them over to the door. Just kind of herd them over.
And then he could just be like, hey, it's not me, man. It's the dog.
Exactly. Totally.
Nothing I can do.
Steak bone for Fred every time somebody left.
That's great.
I think a fellow dachshund owner texted in, my hot dog sleeps with his eyes open.
Oh, that is creepy.
It's a great sentence.
Man. My hot dog. Is he talking about the dachshund?
I think so.
Okay, fine.
There's no context, but I assume that's what...
Let's hope.
I know. If it's not, then I have no idea what's happening there.
Thank you very much, Don. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio, weekdays 1 to 3, and Saturdays here from 10 to noon when we're not preempted for something. And actually, baseball does not get in the way of this Saturday little get-together of ours much at all season long. So we sure enjoy the Saturdays. We hope that you do, too. I know a lot of you listen to The Mincing Rascals. It's a podcast that I record on Thursday, so we dropped a brand new episode Thursday night around 5. It features Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio, Patty Vasquez, and Justin Kaufman join us a lot, too. And then over at the Chicago Tribune, it's Eric Zorn, the columnist, and their editorial cartoonist, Scott Stantis. So from that podcast, let's just feature part of it in this broadcast. We'll start with Eric Zorn and the gang talking about Lori Lightfoot's victory.
Lori Lightfoot is very smart, and she's very tough. I think we've seen this in some of her in the debate. We saw it when she squared off with Martwick before the general election. And I think she's going to be able to push through some things. And, yeah, I think Chicago is going to change under her.
There's also, she has this unassuming demeanor. I mean, the video of her walking into the fifth floor yesterday, City Hall, to meet with Rahm Emanuel, she just kind of was walking on her own and sort of with no air about her. I mean, I just think it's a completely different sort of personality than anyone who's held the office since I've been around.
And I think that was true throughout the campaign. She never really, you know, never got riled up. Never. She always seems to have an even keel about things. Even when, as you mentioned, she had a square off in a sort of public argument. You know, she just stayed the course. And
but she seems, I'm sorry.
Yes.
She seems tough as nails. And I love that because that's what it's going to take. You still have the machine. It's not dead. It's a little bruised, but it's not, it hasn't gone away. And they, people like that don't go away. You're talking about money and power, and they don't let go of those two things easily. I'm hoping for transparency and honest government, which we have not had for, well, ever.
She strikes me as a little humorless. Is that a fair assessment of her personality?
She does not. She's not highly charismatic, I would say, in terms of, like, you know, having a megawatt smile or having this real ability to connect with people and crowds and so on. But she has a real sort of quiet, focused intelligence. I think some of this toughness is part of her training as an attorney, defense attorney and prosecutor. She's very tough, very focused.
I feel like, don't you feel like she holds her cards very close to the vest? You
yes.
know? I think that seems
yes.
to be
in
the way
some ways.
She...
Lightfoot indicated that she maybe had some inside knowledge that there were going to be more aldermen caught up in whatever they're going to be calling the, you know, happy ending, Operation Happy Ending, whatever they're going to be calling.
Oh, let's not call it that.
But I think this is transformative, this election, because of Lightfoot, sure. But the loss of Pat O'Connor on the north side, I mean, that's the end of an era there. And who's left from that era? I mean, Burke still is here, but maybe not for long. And when you talk about the machine, I don't know where that machine is anymore.
Do you guys believe that part of the reason people voted for her was because, in some part, the same reason people voted for Donald Trump? They
yes.
just wanted somebody
yes.
who was different.
Disruption, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I also think that, and as we mentioned on my show on Tuesday night, Scott and I were talking, I saw this post, someone said every ward where people drink soda voted for Lori Lightfoot, which was, of course, every single ward.
Every ward voted for Lori yeah. Lightfoot. I was just disappointed in the whole five-week run-up because I never really... sensed a great difference. It just didn't, this, the, you know.
Between them?
Yeah.
Really?
Did I
really?
Miss a lot there?
I
wrote about that. I think that in terms of major policy positions, they were very similar. And I think one of the reasons why turnout wasn't any bigger than it was mm-hmm. there were a number of people who said, you know what, either way, I'm A, happy, or B, not going to be happy. Because there were two progressive female African-American mayoral candidates. And you look down the line at how they were talking about housing, how they were talking about police, how they were talking about schools. I mean, there were some differences, but they weren't like huge differences. This wasn't Rauner against Pritzker or Trump against Clinton. These were two people who are very close to each other.
I think policy-wise, you're correct. But I think in terms of their connection with the machine, in terms of hope for progressive or, you know, just clean government, they were as different as night and day. You had Tony Preckwinkle, who seemed to be, every scandal that broke, she seemed to be tied into the guy. Berrios first, of course, and then Burke.
Jim Allen from the Board of Elections had something interesting about the turnout low, and he said, this is what you see in landslide elections.
Okay, we're moving on to Trump land now.
It's like there's a horse loose in a hospital.
First, we'll start with the Mueller report. Mueller's team wrote a summary that we haven't seen. I guess that's logical, but I didn't even think about that. Attorney General William Barr wrote a summary. That was the four pages that we were all able to digest. But Mueller wrote a summary, too.
And that they had written summaries that they assumed were going to be made public. They made summaries of each portion of the investigation that they felt summarized and would not have to be redacted, that those were going to be available for public consumption.
We're going to see the report, right?
Oh.
We better. We paid for it.
I've been saying that with confidence all along. Say that again?
No, don't say that.
The money that they were able to, that's the fines and everything from Manafort and everything that they did from that.
I know, but I don't like balance sheets on investigations.
Saying that we paid for it is also not accurate then.
I know, but to say, well, we milked this much out of someone we investigated.
Patty, you're saying that since the American taxpayers paid for this report, we automatically have some right to expect the return.
That's what
right?
Scott said.
That's what
Scott.
I'm saying.
Yeah, and I disagree with that too, because there are.
Why?
Well, let me just finish. What?
You're exasperating today.
There are a lot of national security investigations or reports or the daily presidential brief. We are paying for that. I don't think it's good for us to necessarily see it.
Well, sure. I mean, I don't agree with that.
I like transparency. I like 100% transparency. I think that's important. I think any time that a government is allowed to hide what it's doing, bad things tend to happen.
Okay, so the president was giving a speech, and he was doing his usual thing, and he was running down Hillary, and he tried to use the word origin.
No collusion, no obstruction. I hope they now go and take a look at the oranges of the investigation, the beginnings of that investigation.
It's one of the weirdest things I've ever seen, because he knew he was using the wrong word, but he couldn't not use it.
That's bizarre.
I've never seen anything like
it. I think this may just be a word that he has trouble saying, and people have words like that.
I used to not be able to, yes.
John, you were saying on your show the other day you can't remember the Tivoli Theater. You were always saying that wrong. I mean,
I used to not be able to say Adirondack, but I can do it. I worked on it.
I used to not, when I first started broadcasting, be able to say Social Security, which is terrible for someone who
Social
radio news.
Security.
Yeah, and we've never heard this happen before. I'm sure he's used the word origin before, and you could see he knew he was using, he knew he was saying the wrong word, but he couldn't stop it. It was,
and couple that with what happened with him telling people where his father was from, and my father from this beautiful town in Germany. His dad was born in New York.
He said it three times.
Yeah.
In The Art of the Deal, he writes that his dad was from Sweden.
He lies. He just makes stuff up. It doesn't really matter.
You said there's
to
a third thing, John?
His assertion that wind power may cause cancer somehow.
Yeah,
via the noise of the mills.
If you have a windmill anywhere near your house, congratulations. Your house just went down 75% in value. And they say the noise causes cancer. You told me that one, okay? You know, the thing makes sense.
I have heard things, the people who live near windmills have elevated levels of some maladies of one form or another. I'm not sure that that's completely, I mean, it may not be true, but it's not like he's the first guy to ever think of it.
He said it was from the noise, and I don't think, I mean,
then there have
been some
the noise.
Conspiracy theories about the noise. Well, he also made fun of Joe Biden for touching women.
My people tell me 2 years. What do you think? 1 week, sir. I said, General, give me a kiss. I felt like Joe Biden.
Well, yeah, I mean, and it's so weird to hear people talking about it. Well, I'd rather have someone smell my hair than grab me by the, you know, and so then it becomes that conversation, which is all wrong.
This Joe Biden thing makes me angry because Let's just put it this way. The idea that the mainstream media is in cahoots with the Democrats and it's this left-wing font, I think, blows up this week because they're interviewing anybody whose hair he smelled. I think it's ludicrous. It's ludicrous on its face. And in the world of Access Hollywood tapes, it's just insane to think that this is disqualifying or even relevant.
It is interesting. I don't think any of the women who have made allegations against him have said that they were at all sexual and directly sexual in nature. With Al Franken, he was like grabbing their rear ends and so
pretending
on, right?
To.
But with Biden, it's just kind of like he's just a little too close. He's rubbing my nose. He's sniffing my hair. He's rubbing my shoulders.
Yeah, there was a nose.
He did a nose to nose
Eskimo kiss thing.
Or no, was it a forehead to nose? He got in someone's nose, Patty. Patty, get back to your microphone. No. Patty's on the floor.
But these are You know, I just think it's someone who doesn't have that sense of it's not a sexual thing. It's more of a sort of a male dominance thing because he doesn't do it to men.
He doesn't kiss men's hair, but I bet he's very touchy with men.
Well, he's talking about hugs and things like that. Not as much, but when you see him grab a woman by the waist and he's rubbing their shoulders, and he's whispering in their ear, and it's what's interesting to me is that, and I've done this. I've just let people. I've my entire life that you know guys have put their arm around me and you know tussled my hair, and you just don't say anything because you're like this is what people do and it is icky and I don't like people invading my space like that. I'm sorry. I have, and now it's less likely. When I go to hug somebody, I say, may I? You know, just because I want to start establishing, really.
I think the may I completely shatters the moment.
No.
The intent.
I understand that, but what I'm telling you is that I've been touched by men the same way that Biden touched, and I'm glad that we're talking about it. I know that people are annoyed, and well, that's just the way he is, but you had plenty of callers. Like that woman who said that her father in-law is like 87 years old, and you know, we try to chalk it up to the fact that he's older. Well, I've told Scott this before. It doesn't matter how old the woman is because it feels the same to her.
She called him a lech.
But that caller was accusing her father-in-law of being a lech. Grabbing them for sexual reasons.
Right.
I don't think that's the case with Biden. And as I continue to try to evolve in all of this, I mean...
Me too.
Yeah, I mean... We confuse any physical contact with sexual contact.
But the recipient...
So from a guy standpoint, it's like, this is clearly not sexual. You know, you need to understand it for that.
I think there's other elements involved.
I didn't finish.
Okay. So it's like, clearly this wasn't sexual. What is the offense here? But what I'm learning from women is that it's not... It doesn't have to be sexual.
The intent doesn't matter.
Right.
The intent doesn't matter. Whatever your or Joe Biden or mine, when I'm mugging for a picture with a bunch of ladies at an event, my intent doesn't matter. You can't do that. I mean, that's...
I'm not going to go... I may not go up and hug a woman because I want to have sex with her. That's not the case. But it's still equally offensive.
It's funny. Steve Cocker noticed this once at a show because audience members at a comedy show would come up to me and hug me, and I would say, "Oh, we're hugging." And he goes, "You don't like to be hugged, do you?" And I said, "No, I really." And I've had to teach myself to be okay with hugging. And people think it's funny. They'll hold me longer, like, "Oh, you don't like this, do you?" And I get a panic attack sometimes because of my experiences. But every single person, I will say this, is different. There are women who like it and are touchy as well. So I understand that it's confusing. I think it's a good conversation. I'm just asking people to listen.
I interviewed a pretty famous author one time, the woman, and she, you know, I shook hands after the interview. I said, "That was very nice. Thank you very much." She goes, "No, I'm a hugger."
Right.
And she completely collapsed on me.
Seriously?
Absolutely.
And that woman is his wife.
I felt embraced.
Right.
I mean, I felt nice about it. It's like, well, this is nice. She cares enough to hug me.
I agree with Patty. This is a great conversation to have. Any man who enjoys, you know, touching women socially in this way without this sexual intent needs to think twice about it.
What I've been telling my audience is I understand that a lot of people are feeling defensive, like, oh, now, and you sort of second guessing everything. And I don't want people to feel attacked either. I also just want to honor those who are feeling like that's how I feel when my boss does that or when a stranger does that. It's unsettling sometimes.
Well, between this and the Me Too movement, there are times where you feel the whole social norm shift, right? And sometimes it takes a while, sometimes it doesn't. But I'm thinking about drinking and driving, and we've finally decided, or wearing seatbelts, or having a gay mayor. You can feel that sometimes things that were radically different are now suddenly the new norm. And sometimes those things happen more quickly. And I'm telling you, the way men interact with women, men of a certain generation, I do think it's generational. This is kind of a whiplash for them.
I will say, when you said that it shatters it when someone says, may I for a hug, for me, I would find it very kind and sweet to sort of ask for permission. You know, in a way that does, it just does. It's gentle.
So is this disqualifying for Joe Biden as a president?
Well, he came out with a video yesterday and seemed to take the right tone. You know, said, look, I get it.
Social norms have begun to change. They've shifted. And the boundaries of protecting personal space have been reset. And I get it. I get it. I hear what they're saying. I understand it. And I'll be much more mindful. That's my responsibility.
So what else can you ask of him, right?
Right.
I could ask him not to run.
Yeah.
But, I think this is another sign he clearly is going to run, and I think he did answer it well.
Right.
But why are we even having this conversation if he's not running for president?
Because he's leading in the polls, and he spoke to fire department, the fire official union a while ago, and said, I got a big announcement coming up in April. So, I mean, he's given every sign he's going to run.
Yeah, I don't think the touchy-feely stuff is going to disqualify him. I think the fact that he's 77 years old, a corporatist, and has been a failed presidential candidate two times before will have a lot to do with that.
And his stance on a lot of things, I think, will also, you know, whether it was the Clarence Thomas hearings, he'll have a lot of audio that...
Patty Vasquez, Scott Stantis, Eric Zorn, also Steve Bertrand and me, John Williams. I host The Smart People that are the Mincing Rascals. That podcast normally goes about 25 to 35 minutes. We drop it every Thursday around 5. There's a new one up from just a couple of days ago, The Mincing Rascals.
Yeah, I'm going to take my horse to the Old Town Road. I'm going to ride till I can't no more. I'm going to take my horse to the Old Town Road. I'm going to ride till I can't no more. I got the horses in the back. Horse stock is attached. Head is matted black. Got the boots black to match. Riding on a horse. Ha, you can whip your Porsche. I've been in the valley. You ain't been up off that porch. Now, can't nobody tell me nothing. You can't tell me nothing. Can't nobody tell me nothing. You can't tell me nothing. Riding on a tractor. Lean all in my butt.
On 11:40 on WGN, John Williams in the Allstate Skyline studio. Producer Griffin always comes out of this segment with a song he thinks we should know a little something about. What are we learning about here, Griff?
This is Old Town Road by Lil Nas X.
Sounds like a mashup of a Western and hip-hop or something like that.
That's exactly, it's a country rap. And this is the, the combination of genres there is...
I've never heard that.
Are we going to hear our music?
Are we going to hear our music?
The vibe score.
Oh, gosh, that's right.
Do you know what we're doing?
I do know what we're doing. Hold on.
No, you know what? We'll keep it going.
I was actually so interested in the music, I forgot to get my music ready. So stand by for the vibe score music.
Let me play you the remix with Billy Ray Cyrus. Here we go.
I'm going to take my horse through the Old Town Road. I'm going to ride.
Because that song by Lil Nas X was on the country and hip-hop Billboard charts and caused a controversy, a stir, when Billboard removed it from the country chart.
Why?
Why was there controversy, or why did they do that?
It sounds country enough to me. I don't know how you get on one chart or the other, but that sounded pretty country to me.
Well, that's the question, right? Is like, what...
Don do the airplane dance. Don, stop dancing like an airplane.
I'm vibing, man.
Go ahead, Griffin.
What's the definition of a country song? What's the definition of a hip-hop song? How do you make that distinction when one blends two genres like that song?
Okay, first, 1 to 100, what do we think of the song Okay. Airplane Boy, go.
99.
Yeah, that was awesome. I'm 90 on that. Joe Brand.
It's a lot to take in.
Is this new to you, Joe?
It is.
You hadn't heard it?
No.
It's blowing up.
Honestly,
right now.
I thought it was like a novelty song, like a what does the fox say or something.
I mean, it kind of is.
I was
but
trying
then
to gather the lyrics.
Too,
yeah.
So
it is. I agree. I don't hate it. I'll give it. I'll give it an 84. I would love to see the reaction of people listening down in Tennessee, like, to their favorite country
what
state.
The hell
what is
this?
This? Right. What in tarnation? This is not country.
Trash.
Well, that is the question, and that's what's so fascinating about it, I think. And so they removed it from the country chart, and that made a lot of people mad. They're like, no, it's country enough. And I think the thing is, I mean, when the beat drops, it is like, that is a hip-hop song. Like,
right.
That's like a trap beat. That you can tell right away that the beat drop is a real thing. But I don't know. But here, let me just read you a tweet from Billy Ray Cyrus, who was featured on the remix. I think in an effort to get it back on the country chart. When you hear Billy Ray Cyrus on that song...
Sounds good.
Well, it all sounds good. I think we're in agreement on that. The song rules. But
my 99 was for the non-remix, by the way.
It does sound...
Yeah, that was for the original, for me.
To my ear, more like a traditional country song. But then it's like, wait, why just because he's singing? It starts to feel a little racial, which I think is like undergirding the whole conversation. People
yes.
being upset. And the truth is that hip-hop and country have been fused for like 10 years, 20
yep.
years.
Yep, yep. Zac Brown Band, man.
Zac Brown. Oh, I mean, the list is the biggest country stars have
Dixie
huge
Chicks.
Hits.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There
but
you
the,
go.
Maybe less with the Dixie Chicks.
All right, I'll just stop
just
talking.
Throwing them out there.
But no, like Jason Aldean and Luke Bryan, Florida Georgia Line is like the biggest country band
oh,
in the
yeah.
world, and they just do rap songs. So
right, right.
But there's never any question about putting them on the country charts. So this is what, you know, kind of confused people about it. Billy Ray Cyrus, after doing the remix, said, "It was so obvious to me after hearing the song just one time. I was thinking, what's not country about it? What's the rudimentary element of a country western song? Then I thought, it's honest, humble, it has an infectious hook and a banjo. What the hell what the hell more do you need?" Is what that was his tweet. And
there's the song about all the elements of a good country song. You got to have a pickup truck and you know,
it's got a
scorned lover and whiskey and all that
beer
stuff
on the front porch.
Close enough. He's got a
hound dog,
cowboy hat from
Mama.
Gucci in this song.
I haven't heard any rap songs about horses either, and I got to say that was
that's
refreshing.
Although Don, you and I are in different places. I like the mashup, if you will. I like the original. The Griff played first.
Yeah.
You like the second version better, right?
No. I like the first version too. I mean, again, I agree with Griff. They both sound good, but
right.
I prefer the non Billy Ray Cyrus, the original.
Well, is the hip hop world embracing a Griff? Do they care?
I mean, I can't. I'm not going to speak for the hip hop world. I don't know if it's really
there's
my
a trap.
Here. No, it's just. But
tell us, Ambassador Griffin, what does the hip hop world say?
Right now, it's a huge viral hit. I'll say that. It also stems from the fact that this was on TikTok. Do you know the app TikTok?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's like what teens
see a lot of advertisements for it on my social media.
That's what kids are using. They're it's for people younger than all of us, but. There was a big thing called the Yeehaw Challenge, where basically you play this song, and then when the beat drops, you're like dancing, singing along to it. When the beat drops, it cuts, and you're wearing like a cowboy outfit and dancing around.
Oh,
to the
I
song.
See.
You
I
know,
see.
You know how these viral things.
Yeah,
are.
Yeah.
So
sure.
That's been going on for a few weeks, and now the song is just kind of reaching a more broad audience, and it's just fun.
All right, cue it back up at least at the end of this bit if you don't have it at fingertips now, Griff, because I think we're.
We can
talking.
Keep it going here.
All right, play a little more of it.
You can go and ask me. My life is a movie. Bull riding in boobies. Cowboy hat from Gucci. Wrangler on my booty. Can't nobody tell me nothing. Can't tell me nothing. Can't nobody tell me nothing. Can't tell me nothing.
I'm gonna take my horse to the old town road. I'm gonna ride.
I got my thumbs in my belt buckle. I'm walking on my heels right now. I'm just kind of strolling into the tavern.
My favorite line is when he says, "Cowboy hat from Gucci, Wrangler on my booty."
I was just thinking that. I was like writing down. I'm like, I got to get a cowboy hat from Gucci, man.
And a Wrangler on your booty.
All right, we can move on. We can move on. But I will just say, it's a similar conversation to what happened when Beyonce performed her song Daddy Lessons, which is kind of a country sort of song that she threw into her album Lemonade at the Country Music Awards. And people are like, wait a minute, that's not country. But, it's you know, we kind of run into this question every few years, I think. And
You know, that kind of reminds me, when Judd Surratt used to be here, we used to produce these long music montages for the background of the hockey highlights. And he was always very musically inclined. He would always give us a handful of different bands to go from. And He brought up the point that Led Zeppelin is kind of a bluegrass sound, and I had never really realized that or thought of it in that sense. And then I think about, you know, some of the guitar solos and when they jam out, and it's like, okay, yeah, I guess I can see that. I don't know, just some kind of like that hybrid of two different musics combined. Mm-hmm. I just, it's interesting. I think you could go on and on and on about all that.
Let the genres meld, bro. What are you afraid of?
Exactly.
Did you just say, let the genres meld, bro? What are you afraid of?
I did, what, yes. What station are we on?
Only guy in the newsroom that can pull that line off.
Yay.
Don Kleffman, ladies and gentlemen. Orange Vanilla Coke. Has anybody tried Orange Vanilla Coke yet?
No.
I have tried. They got a bunch of new Diet Cokes also, like Blood Orange,
right.
Diet Coke, and some Wild Cherry Diet Coke, I think.
Is that working for you?
It's fine. I don't know. I mean, it all tastes like chemicals.
Nice.
That's
refreshing.
What I'm going for.
Some of those tasty
What am I here for is some chemicals. Let's do it.
I'd be interested, on a scale of 1 to 100, just text 312-981-7200. 1 to 100, if you tried the Orange Vanilla Coke. They had a couple cans of it in the suite yesterday. I was at the White Sox game, and we're sitting there eating the food and drinking the drinks, and they had some Orange Vanilla Coke. And I thought, oh, Richard Roper tweeted about that, and he said, I like orange, I like vanilla, I like Coke. Don't like this product, though. Mm. It's like subtraction by addition. And I thought, yeah, I don't. I should have popped the can and tried it, but I didn't. He convinced me that it was not a good combination.
So you haven't tried it?
I have not tried it yet. I'm giving it a 32.
So we're doing a vibe score segment on something none of us have ever tried.
I'm sure somebody out there has. 312-981-7200. Text your Orange Vanilla Coke score.
I did always like just Vanilla Coke.
I did too.
Yeah.
Really?
I always loved cherry cola, but I found that, like, at the movie theater when you can put in, you know, each of its own from the fountain drink,
yeah.
Mixing cherry Coke with, like, vanilla Coke is better than the cherry vanilla Coke.
Wow.
So I feel like it's probably the same with the orange, too.
You've just got the touch. They need to hire you.
That's because there was a trend at one point, I think when I was in high school, when kids used to put all the fountain drinks into one cup.
Oh, yeah, right.
And never got that. I would never like that.
I tried it. It's absurd. It doesn't taste like anything.
That is called a suicide, I believe.
That's what we used to call it.
Really?
It's not super PC.
Okay, here's the question for you. The National Championship College basketball game is going to be played Monday night with an 8 o'clock tip-off. And some people are saying, this is really stupid. That's 9 o'clock on the East Coast, 8 o'clock Central Time on a school night, on a weeknight. Why don't they do it like the Super Bowl or anything else you want to play the national championship game on a Saturday evening? You could play the Final Four on a Thursday evening. They've got the whole week off. It would move the games closer, keep the momentum going, and it doesn't make any sense to play late on a weeknight.
I'm guessing no one's going to watch something else. An average sports fan will watch the college national championship over everything else if it's on Monday night. If it's on Saturday, you're fighting against your baseball team, you're fighting against hockey. And Monday night, you know, it's just a different essence, I feel like.
You want to keep it where it is?
I'm fine with I agree with you. Maybe they should bump up the time a little bit. But yes, I understand where they're coming from. But why not Sunday? Why not Sunday night?
I mean, Sunday night would work.
It's going to be a school night anyway.
Works for the Super Bowl.
But I guess that's the most profitable way because you get the two Final Four games on Saturday night, and then you get the national championship on Monday. I'm guessing that's the most profitable.
It's
Saturday and Monday rather than Sunday and Friday.
Yeah, I'm sure people who know more about it have thought hard on it and decided on what they're doing. But the tournament loses so much momentum. I just very looking at it from the outside, not having to deal with the actual problems. I always think, like, why don't we keep it going?
I agree.
Let's keep it moving.
The championship football games, too.
It's March Madness, and it's not March anymore.
Exactly.
Well, I was just thinking about that, too, because there's all this excitement for the first day, you know, the first weekend of rounds.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And that's where the least money is coming in for all these pools and the brackets and everything. And then you get to this point, and now we've got hockey playoffs right around the corner. We've got baseball actually happening now with the regular season. Now it's like, oh, yeah, and the Final Four's on, and the national champion's coming up, national championship is coming up. And that's where the biggest payouts are with all these things. I guess if you're just a gambling junkie, rookie and you're putting a lot of money on the early rounds because you feel like you've got a leg up on the competition, that helps you. But I just feel like there's a whole bunch of commotion just because the games are playing. The value of the game isn't as big as what's going on the past few days.
Because it's kind of quantity versus quality, isn't it? Like when the thing starts, you got a ton of games to choose from and you got the whole audience of people watching split amongst all those games, and then that's whittled down to just one choice.
And by now, your brackets are so blown up that all of the momentum, all of the fun you were having following the tournament is dissipated. If you just cram them all a little closer together, on a scale of 1 to 100, moving it up earlier and playing the championship game on a Saturday or Sunday night, I'm giving that a solid 100. All right. Thank you, fellas. Let's pause here. Amy Guth is in the house. Is she filling in today? No.
Sorry, no. It's John Hanson in for
Amy. Oh, okay. Good. John will pop in just a couple minutes. Let's find out what's coming up on his show next on WGN. John Hanson's in for Amy. Hi, John.
Hey, I got to thank you first before I tell you what I'm doing today, because it was about six Saturdays ago on a real gloomy February Saturday, and I was listening to you while driving around. I think Pitchers and Catchers had just reported, and you went on this long diatribe about, well, you know, soon next week is the start of spring training. Then next week is this, and if you can look past that, it's St. Patrick and blah, 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 blah,
blah. I lined up all of the dominoes to get you there.
And we're here. We did it. And I didn't believe you on that day, but a nice weekend is here, and a little cooler along the lakefront, but really just a nice...
And a shorter show for you today.
Yeah, a really quick one, so I should probably move it along. Yeah, we're going to talk about what the election of Lori Lightfoot means to business owners. You know, Mayor Emanuel has been big about building big downtown, but what is Lori Lightfoot going to do about building small businesses in the communities? And she's been advocating more for that. And we're going to dive a little bit into, and I got to admit, I don't know as much as I should about the opioid crisis. I mean, it's a buzz couple words that we use all the time now. But the Sackler family, who runs started OxyContin, they're dropping off of these nonprofit boards now. And I don't know if dropping off or being kind of gently guided off the boards is part of it. So
that's a fascinating story. I'm glad you're going to spend some time on that. I'm going to get out of the way. You have a really good show.
Thank you very much.